Hello, and welcome to the GameSlave Podcast, episode 151. I'm Proteus.
I'm Assimilator.
And I'm Zelda Queen.
And we have returned from Denver Comic Con.
It was pure chaos.
And I have Concrud. At least that's what I'm going to say I have.
I was Patient Zero.
You know, there's actually probably multiple Patient Zeros, given there were, what, 48 or 49,000 people there per day?
Let me have my moment of fame.
Fine, you were Patient Zero.
At least at our table.
Or infamy. Maybe I was the artist alley, Patient Zero.
Entirely possible there. But we had a lot of fun. This was our first time we actually had a table, and to celebrate that, we gave away several hundred buttons. Probably close to 500 or 600 buttons. And then we gave out about 700 bookmarks, and took 295 pictures? Or at least that's the number of pictures that got posted to the Facebook and Google Plus pages.
Okay, so that's not including the various duplicates when you were doing multiple poses and such.
That was one copy of each person.
Yeah.
Except for the guy in the Ghostbuster suit who I had him turn around because it was a working proton pack and I wanted to get a picture of some of the lights.
Well, when we say working, we mean it lit up. Not, it shot beams of things that would
theoretically
entrap a ghost.
It was not an unshielded nuclear reactor on their back. But it did light up and look pretty. But a lot of fun was to be had by all. I think it was actually, despite line problems, I think it was a success.
Yeah, I think I was looking at, following the con on Facebook, and so they put up a post as like, you know, give us some feedback on, you know, like, you know, basically the post-mortem of our con. How did we do? And people were like, it was great, except for the line to get in. It's like, that was really... It sounded like the only bad thing was trying to get in.
And you can't fault them for not being entirely prepared for this. I mean, last year they had 23,000 or something like that people approximately per day.
Yeah.
So they doubled.
Yeah, they over-doubled their attendance this year.
Yeah, I mean, you can only forecast so much. And no one expects 100% growth in their attendance from one year to the next, when they're already, you know, 23,000 people per day is already a lot.
Yeah.
That's a lot of people.
That's basically what NDK is per day.
Well, NDK has a attendance cap of 7,500.
Per day?
Yes.
So it's that much for the weekend.
Yeah.
They get it about 21,000 for the whole weekend, yeah.
Yeah, so we're talking that NDK's entire attendance cap in a single day.
Yeah.
Last year.
Yeah.
And they doubled that this year. And I mean, you
just don't expect that much growth. You say, okay, yeah, we'll probably, you know.
And to get,
I mean, they probably said, oh, we'll get like 35 or something. Maybe it would, I think, be maybe like kind of their optimistic, yeah.
And to give people a little perspective, Denver Comic Con in its second year has sold the same amount of tickets that the Great American Beer Festival does.
Jesus.
And that's a long running convention.
Great
American Beer Festival is limited and being in the, it's still in the merchandise mart, isn't it?
No, it's at the Denver Convention Center.
Is it at the Convention
Center?
Or
a Colorado Convention Center. Yeah, okay. It's at the Convention Center because, when you go downtown during Father's Day weekend this year, you'll see a lot of people with the Great American Beer Festival badges.
Yeah.
By the way, it is this weekend.
Yeah, on the other hand, the Great American Beer Festival caps their attendance. And so their tickets sell out in a day.
Less than a week, yeah. Everything's gone. We know. We get to pre-order stuff, but it's too expensive. I can't afford like $200 a ticket.
Yeah, it's...
I'm just saying, I'm still pretty proud of our Comic-Con in the second year to sell that many.
Oh, yeah.
They need the entire convention center next year instead of, I think they had two-thirds of it this year.
I'm not sure what the entire size of that exhibit hall is.
Yeah, but... I think there's another hall.
Maybe it'd be nice if they could get like all the, like have artist alley
in one, like in the, one art, the art, like the artists in one and the vendor booths in another.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe
I would
to a
just
degree,
like,
I think that there, you get a bit of spillover crowd.
That's true. I just wish.
Or put the artist with the guests there with the guest, you know, signing booths, because that would.
Oh, the guest signing booths were with us.
Oh, I know. I'm thinking in terms of. A theoretical, you know, next year layout.
I did think the layout this year was better than the layout last year, though. Because basically you walked in and you had the big booths for the people selling stuff. Then behind that, you had a break in the, you had a break in the area. Then you had Artist Alley, which actually I felt the aisles weren't too badly spaced for that.
They seemed the appropriate width. It wasn't like, they weren't so wide that people could kind of walk down the middle and ignore all of the artists and never get accosted.
Or like somebody yelling, hey, you, come have a free button. Or you, come back behind the table. I'm taking a picture of you.
Yeah, exactly. But they weren't so narrow that traffic just completely log jam all the time. You know, once in a while you get a group of people looking at one booth and it would kind of make it, which was fun to watch, you know, and in terms of a guy who is taking fluid mechanics, you're like, hey, this is like water flowing and eddying around a rock. The way people are walking around this, you know, group that's stopped at the booth.
I'm glad you think of it in science terms.
Well, actually, it is
mathematical.
Yeah, I mean, and they actually had a lot of really good guests this year. We actually had the honor, or at least I had the honor, of moderating a panel for Raphael Sparge. You guys, if you listen to the podcast, you probably saw that come up in our feed yesterday. Yeah. Where he talked about his experiences as a voice actor in the Mass Effect series. And he mentioned two external resources in his, in the podcast. And if you didn't see the notes because you just download this directly or something like that, you can find the things he references in the podcast news page, which is Caden's letter to Shepard, which is kind of a love letter about stuff that wasn't said during Mass Effect 2. And this very sentimental page about the very last scene in Mass Effect 3 for the last DLC. So, yeah. Long story short, I guess, of the whole thing, we had a lot of fun, and we plan on going again next year. Mm-hmm. Maybe I'll maybe try to plan it out a little better, though.
Yeah, I think we need to plan ourselves in shifts to cover the booth.
Yeah, I just didn't know what to expect. We've never manned a booth before. We mostly just wandered into things, and we did do like hardly any panels this year since we were manning the booth. And I was kind of like, man, should have gotten more panels.
But I did spend a lot of time. My throat actually almost went out on me at the end of Sunday because we were situated, I don't know, three rows over from the rock band stage. So I'm yelling to try and be heard over that while we're explaining stuff about what the game slave is and while I'm trying to get pictures taken.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to sound all excited about it, so.
Yeah, I was just glad to see there was a lot of art, you know, at least artists in the Artist Alley. Mostly just because I know lots of friends there.
Yeah, and it's to a degree, it was a lot of people doing original art and original comics. It wasn't how I have perceived NDK's Artist Alley to be the last few years, which is just a lot of fan art and crafts and things.
I mean, you're going to find that, because people want that. And then if people
there was some of that. I'm not saying there wasn't any. It's just I felt that it was more dominated by original things.
Well, one thing that was nice was, you know, there's people that are professionals in, like, big media that were there, too, in Artist Alley.
Well, yeah, we were just, like, a few booths down from Kevin Anderson.
Yeah, and the last half hour of the convention, I started walking around a little bit, walked by the guy that designed all the phasers for the new Star Trek movies.
Hmm. We ran into an old high school friend.
Yeah.
Whose husband is an artist.
He does really, it's essentially fan art, but it's just really, actually just nice, like, superhero portraits. Like, you know, I think did it look like he was using oil mainly for them?
Some of it did, but some of it was, he had a few good, really, looked like pencil sketches to me. But he was very talented, and I was like, cool. Yeah, there's just, I don't know, I just think there's a lot of good, talented people that were in Artist Alley. Yeah.
What was his first name?
Jeff.
Yeah, Jeff Hedren, I think.
And one thing I found out, of course, I kind of expected this, our neighbors were really nice.
I think, in general, most of the time, everybody is like, because you all want to be there.
The only case where I think you might have trouble with a neighbor is if you have too similar of a thing that you do.
Yeah, competition.
Of course, in my case, I kept trying to sell our neighbor stuff when people came by.
Yeah.
Come on, there was many more times where I was like, yeah, you got free buttons here, you got literature here, you got art there, you're where you want to be in the middle of everything.
I guess the only thing I wish is we would have happened to be lucky enough to be seated next to one of our friends, which would have been, you know,
like
fun.
Like Angie Chan or something?
Yeah, Angie or Kit.
You know, I thought
or Nami. Nami would have been hilarious.
I thought it was kind of nice to make the new relations, though.
That's true, too.
Meet other new people.
Maybe next to one friend and one new person.
Or you just go bum at the other person's booth since you have an Artist Alley badge, and you're going to be like, I'm going to go be your friend at your booth now and see what you guys are doing.
But yeah, we talked a little more about Comic-Con than I expected to be honest. I know we spent 3 days there, but we didn't really have a plan.
I'm just glad. Hooray, light rail. Hooray, the train. Train saved us a lot of aggravation from trying to find a place to park and paying $20 to park when I paid $20 for the whole weekend. You must have gone further out. There was one lot found it was $20.
I parked in the convention center.
Oh,
the convention center lot is less expensive than that dirt lot that was right outside of the convention center?
Yes.
That's inconceivable.
And I had no problem finding parking there because I show up an hour before they start letting people in to get the table set up.
Yeah, on the other hand, we were still paying less for the two of us to take the train back and forth.
Yeah, well, I had to, you know.
Oh, yeah, you had to haul stuff.
We helped
Kit haul her stuff. To schlep it out to Arvada or Wheat Ridge or whatever.
Yeah, because
Friday night.
Because we just happened by her booth like right before closing and we're like, packing up.
She's like, she's like, yeah, we're taking the train. We're taking the train.
Do you need some help?
Friends!
So for those that don't know, what does Kit do?
Kit
does arts.
Yeah, Kit does arts. She's an illustrator. She currently is a teacher at my alma mater, the Rocky Mountain College of Art and Design. She teaches in the illustration department.
She is, her, latest projects have been really great illustrations of, 19-teens and 20s movie stars.
Okay.
So think Buster Keaton, Charlie Chaplin,
Harold Lloyd, Marx Brothers, you know, that was sort of her thesis because she was getting her master's. But she also does comics. She has one completed one called Otto the Odd and the Dragon. It's really short. It's really cute. You can find it online. I'll give you links. But the other one she's currently working on is Eves of All Saints, which is talking about her other thing that she's really interested in, which is sort of like how during the Renaissance, how you sort of got sort of comedic actor troupes that would go through towns and stuff and perform. This is sort of talking about the beginning of that and meaning all these characters who come together to form this sort of group and go out through, like, Renaissance Italy.
Okay.
It's written by a gentleman that she knows who, I think he's, like, in his 60s or 70s now. He's an elderly gentleman who lives out, I think, somewhere in, like, Washington? Oregon? I can't remember. She's told me now I can't remember. But he's basically written the book, and she's basically illustrating his book now.
Okay.
And it's really good. She's very, very talented. And the other art friends we have, or we've already mentioned Angie, she does Devil's Cake, which is a Victorian folk tale romantic comedy, I would say. There's definitely Victorian clothing going on. There's lots of supernatural sort of folklore things, and hijinks ensue between characters who don't know exactly what they're meant to do yet.
Yep. Angie also is a Homestuck and does lots of the Homestuck fan arts.
Her particular style, I think, is very suited to, you know, drawing the trolls as very beautiful creatures.
Yeah.
And then there's Nisi, who does sort of... I know she does some Yuri sort of comics, but she also does, like... She has one called The Good Prince, which is cute. I've read a little bit of it. She's starting, I think, to post again, which makes her happy. She was having problems for a while. And I don't know, she just has exactly describe how she draws. It's very, you know, manga-esque, but very light, really clean, beautiful lines. And then there is Nami, who's there with, she has a variety of projects.
Yeah. Suffice to say, Nami's spirit animal is Pinkie Pie.
Yeah. That'd be a great way of describing Nami's personality.
But she is the person I can go off on science, you know, tangents with, which is great.
She does a podcast called Rabble Bites, which they usually stream live on Thursday nights, I believe. So, like, tonight. And, She has a couple of comics that she's writing, but they started a new one, and I feel really terrible now that I can't remember what the new one she is that she started. But those are the peeps we know that are artists who are doing stuff. So I'll have to give you links to all their things.
All right, we'll get them posted under the Denver Comic Con section of the notes.
Yes. Maybe we should move on.
Okay, I'm going to move on. Just today, Xbox or Microsoft posted some clarifications about the Xbox One to kind of explain some of the more controversial aspects of it. The biggest downside is, yes, the Xbox One does need to go online to verify game content and patches once a day, minimum. So if your internet goes down for 2 days, you're SOL. You're not going to be able to play your games for day two. You'll still be able to watch downloaded videos or watch TV through it, but you won't be able to play any games. So it need the connection once a day. On the upside, the used game license fees that people were talking about, they're not required. Microsoft is not actually going to be charging to sell a used game to somebody. The charges are at the option of the developers.
Or publishers. Publishers' discretion.
Yeah, exactly. So EA could say that if a game is sold used, they want this much money for said used for the game to be reactivated on another account. Or if they don't want to continue to be considered the most evil company in America, they won't do that.
I'm sorry. I think they've done some terrible sort of things in their business model, but I'm sorry. You know, other companies that are like foreclosing on people's homes and kicking them out when they really shouldn't and all these other stuff, I think trumps, you know, the fact that I have to pay extra for downloadable content.
And actually, they're removing all the game passes, even retroactively. Like, if you have Mass Effect 2 and you never paid for the servers pack, you're going to get it. You can go on and get it now, or not now, but I think eventually they're starting to remove them all. Because I think they just found that system didn't work. But here's the problem why I think EA got this. Banks are expected to have that level of evil to them.
But this is like ruining people's lives.
Oil companies are expected to have that level of evil of them. A game company is expected to be fun. A game company is expected to embody these certain aspects of joy.
I guess it's that we expect all their employees to be running around, you know, having Nerf fights half of the day.
But then I've heard terrible things if you're in game development. Like, it's, you know, if I was doing concept or something, that'd be one thing. But some of these people hearing some of the horror stories have come out of, like, programming and such, I'm all like, holy cow. It's not all fun and dandy, and there's a whole bunch of other things that could go on, how, you know, there's barely any women working in developing games, and all the misogyny, and all that sort of stuff, too, and the non-ethnicities, and...
Yeah, essentially it's kind of like, you know, a frat house.
Yeah.
In all the worst aspects of that.
So, but yeah, I mean...
Yeah, I just find it funny that...
Different aspect of public opinion is what causes EA to be voted as that worst game, as that worst company. I kind of agree with you. I think there's got to be worse companies than Electronic Arts.
There could also be. Was this like via online polls?
Yes.
The Consumerist online poll.
Well, there is also the sampling bias in that case, then, which is people who are already online are more likely to be gamers.
That is true. But then, the Kinect is only going to be. When the Xbox is off, the Kinect camera isn't on all the time. And it's only listening for you that Xbox on. Assuming you don't turn that feature off. You can turn that feature off. When you're watching a movie or something, you can turn the Kinect off so it's not doing the counting people in the room thing that we'd heard about. So they'll walk you through all the privacy options from what I was reading when you do the initial setup. So, it's not going to be this eye that's always on 24/7 in your living room can make you watching everything you do, and it's not going to be constantly transmitting all your conversations and everything to Microsoft.
Because I don't see Microsoft keeping all the information. I mean, they're basically going to probably mine it out to, you know, targeted advertising. That's what it's just like, Man, is that all you can do? It's like whenever I look at something on Amazon real quick, just to, you know, say, oh, I wonder if that's out or something yet. And then when you go to other websites, it's known that you've gone there because all of a sudden you get all these very targeted advertisements.
Delete your cookies.
Just like, man.
Man, how do you get targeted ads? Everything I browse, I know. It's just...
And I mean, I'm not doing anything.
Oh, that's right. I found the ad block for Chrome. I forgot about that.
Yeah, delete your cookies. It'll reduce.
The internet is a surprisingly enormously more happy experience without ads. or with a minimum of ads.
But yeah, so that's it about the Xbox. I'm looking forward to see what Microsoft actually says despite naysayers and other things such as, yes, the UI is probably a little clumsy. Yes, they probably faked it for their press conference to make it look good. But they still have several months to get all the kinks worked out. The reason it's not releasing right now is because it's not ready to be released right now. But they had to announce something for
E3. Yeah. I guess it's one of those things you're like, I wonder how far along they really are. Are they super far along or only sort of far along? Or are they, you know, at that weird point where it's like, it really should have been better if they delayed? But they really want to get it out.
And they really can't delay if they want to make it in the market.
Yes.
I mean, Nintendo's already been out for, the Wii U's already been out for a year. They don't want to release a year after the PS4 does.
Yeah, I guess I'm just like, I can't keep up anymore. I'll admit it. I just can't keep up. I just do not have the time nor money nor, mostly time and money to invest in everything. Because I'm just like, how much is this going to cost? I mean, I start thinking about, like, oh, good, let's lay out a whole grand for this.
You're trying to not cost. I'm trying to run a blog and actually write about all this stuff. I need to buy at least one of these two consoles when they come out. I can't afford both of them. That ain't happening.
This is just the thing. I'm just like, I wish they would give their systems. I would like longer shelf lives.
Well, in all reality,
the pace of hardware development is just
staggering now.
I mean, in all reality, we had a 7-year shelf life for the 360.
That's true.
It just doesn't seem that long.
But I mean, we used to see new consoles every 3-4 years.
Yeah, how long was it between
Nintendo? So they've and Super? Almost doubled their console lives already.
The Super Nintendo came out what 84?
Yeah.
Well, in Japan. Now I started to think here.
Super Nintendo. How old was I when I was playing Zelda? I was in middle school.
Yeah, I was in middle school too.
So I was.
Let's see. Just have this in a nice list now.
NES. Ba 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 ba. Doesn't say when it came out.
Let me try and find when these came out. Continue talking about stuff while I do this.
Yeah, I guess it's just a thing. I don't know. Maybe it's because, you know, looking through the lens of nostalgia, and it seemed like there were that many, like, sudden leaps in technology. But mostly, too, I think it's because my parents delayed in getting a lot of stuff. I think the first system we got that came out the year it was released was a 64. But that was just because my parents got lucky that my aunt at the time was working at Walmart and was able to snag one and put it on layaway for us.
The hilarious piece of nostalgia to me, that, you know, thinking back to that, is how the consoles were rated by how many, you know, bits they were.
16-bit.
Okay. So the NES was released on October 18th of 1985. The SNES was August 23rd of 91.
So that's 6 years.
The 64 was in 96. So that was five years.
Man, it just doesn't seem that long, but I think I got a lot of play life out of my stuff.
The GameCube was 2001, so that was 5 years. And then the Wii was 2006, so that was 5 years. So, I mean, Nintendo's done about every 5 years.
Yeah. And part of it may be just that there were two consoles back then. There was Nintendo and Sega. And people tended to just buy one or the other. As far as my perception was, I had a Nintendo, a couple of my friends had a Sega, and that was just kind of... That was it. So I never really grew up playing Sonic. I grew up playing Mario.
Yeah.
And here's something shorter term. Xbox was released in 2001. 360 was released in 2005. So here we are. That was a 4-year difference.
Yeah.
And now we are here in 2013 and so they're finally releasing the Xbox One.
Yeah.
So they're trying to make these consoles last longer.
Yeah.
And I think we're seeing that by the fact that it's not just the hardware that they're working on now, it's the software, and they can update that through the internet.
Yeah.
Or release multiple iterations of the same hardware with different skins.
Yeah. The only case I can think of people upgrading the hardware was that expansion pack for the 64.
And that came with one of the game with the game.
It came
that
with
needed.
Majora's. It came with Majora's Mask.
I thought it was Donkey Kong.
Majora's Mask had one too.
Oh, I think I got mine with Donkey Kong 64.
Yeah, because I bought Majora's Mask and it came with it because it needed it. The game wouldn't work without it.
But at least Nintendo was aware that they'd need to do that.
Yeah. And we've got way off topic again.
Oh yeah, we did.
Brace yourselves.
E3 is coming. We already talked about that a little bit where I'm looking forward to the press conference. I actually am attending two of the press conferences this year. I'm attending the EA press conference and the Sony press conference.
Oh, you guys are getting into Square Enix booth too.
Yes, and we're going to do a tour of the Square Enix booth. So I'll have lots of content for this. And I'm going to try and live blog. I'm going to attempt to live blog the EA conference and the PlayStation conference. That's going to be real hard to do from a tablet because my laptop's battery doesn't last too long.
I'm just surprised Nintendo's not doing a press conference, because everybody's all like, Nintendo, what are you doing? This is like the first time ever that they have not done a press conference.
Well, I mean, they have Nintendo Direct in order to advertise to the people that aren't going to be there, and then those of us that are there, we actually get to go to their booth. So in all reality, they don't need to do a press conference.
Maybe they're just so embarrassed out of how much, you know, people kind of have mocked their press conferences in the past for being kind of silly and...
They are a little silly, but Miyamoto's there. I mean, it's like...
It was kind of cool when they did the full orchestra for a Zelda songs, though. And Miyamoto had them... It was either Miyamoto or Reggie Fils-Aimé had them just doing random stuff. It's like, play this now! But, I'm actually looking forward to seeing more of the games that are going to be released for the PS4 and the Xbox One, even though I'm only going to get one of the systems. I'm looking forward to see some of the smaller stuff, because that's usually where you kind of find the few gems.
Yeah, I guess...
And they're going to have the, that VR headset thing. That's going to be in the IndieCade with some games. The, what was that thing called?
I haven't heard of this, so you're way ahead of me.
We discussed it at one point, I do recall this.
Because we were talking about how you could take off your glasses and you could adjust the visual depth for your eyesight without having to, so you could still see without your glasses.
Why do I not remember this at all?
It was crowdfunded, they talked about how it'll have it'll actually project wider than you can see, so you can turn
I watched their Kickstarter now that you mention it. Well, that was a while ago.
Yeah. Was that going to be capable of working with any game, or do the games have to be specifically programmed?
I don't remember.
To work with it. So I'm imagining that MMOs could be quite fun with a VR headset. Quite fun or quite nauseating, I'm not sure which.
Let's go with both.
Much like the 3DS.
You can only go so long. But there's so many good games for my 3DS right now. I need to play more. It's so sad. I just not have enough time. I feel like kind of under the weather right now. Does it help either?
Yeah, it'll be really cool. The Oculus Rift. So I'm actually looking forward to get my hands on that to see if it's everything that it's been claimed to be. And yeah, so E3 next week. Looking forward to it. Many more pictures to take. Lots of walking to do.
I am hoping that Nintendo pulls some sort of, Zelda announcement out of their wherever.
Out of their U.
yeah, for the Wii U. I am well aware of the, 3DS Link to the Past sequel, which does look really good.
It's going to be, they're not going to announce an original one. They're going to announce the remade Majora's Mask for the Wii U.
Well, they already know they're releasing Wind Waker. They are doing a high-definition Wind Waker. I think it's coming out on the Virtual Console for the Wii U. They've announced that, but they haven't announced anything about Majora's Mask, and everybody that I've noticed, at least Zelda-wise, is clamoring, Majora's Mask.
Though I think about it, wasn't it a year like 2 years ago, E3, that they had just the teaser pictures for Skyward Sword with, with Fee, yeah. Was that the E3, or was that a different convention or expo?
I don't remember.
Because 2 years ago is when I got to go, and that's when they least they had Skyward Sword as a demo because it came out that fall.
Oh, I'm thinking then even a few years more back.
So apparently we're still going old school and we're hoping for the best for Nintendo.
I'm sorry,
We grew up with Nintendo.
We grew up with it, but like when you were showing all the trailers at Denver Comic Con, I was like, don't care, don't care, don't care, don't care, don't care.
Yeah, to a degree, Nintendo tends to have the games I care about, is the way it is.
I'm not into first-person shooters.
I prefer something that has taken, story and art over photorealism.
Or just guns. Guns in general. Like, shooting and killing and beating up other people.
I mean, there's still, like, games I like, they're still fighting, it's like, Bastion or Diablo or...
You just prefer them with a more artsy term at times instead of the photorealism.
I'm more for the art aesthetic. Not, rendering. I mean, we can render, especially now, we can render to the cows come home and things are looking, practically movie realistic at this point, real life realistic, which... I mean, some of the people who were coming by our booth were commenting, I'm like, it probably is a cutscene. I said, but the way games are going anymore, it's getting harder and harder to tell between cutscene and actual gameplay demo. Yeah.
The Batman Arkham Origins trailer, obviously that one's all CG, rendered. But the Call of Duty Ghost one, I think that's supposed to be how it's supposed to look in game.
Yeah, so I mean, we're getting closer and closer, and it's cool that we can get to that level of realism. But I think that for being video games as an art is trying to sometimes push the envelope in different directions.
Okay. Let's go ahead and continue this discussion after E3.
Yes. Bring back news.
Because we're running out of time and yeah. So Arrested Development season 4 released on
Netflix. Streaming all at once.
So if you're an Arrested Development fan, you probably already knew this.
Yeah. And if you want, you can basically binge yourself, which is what several of the TV critics that I follow have done. They basically watch it all in a night. Woo!
Netflix, I think, is actually doing good things here by they realize there's a market for this.
Oh, they just,
so they do it.
Yes, but they need to get their butts in gear and be better about how they talk. Like right now, they're trying to renegotiate with Viacom because they lost all of Viacom's content practically. So, like, if you want to watch Avatar, Last Airbender, it's all gone now. A lot of the Nicktoons, all gone now. Because Nick's owned by Viacom, and they couldn't renew their contract before it was up, and I don't know what's going on with that. And it's just, I'm sorry, Netflix has lost a lot of contracts because they don't know how to, I don't know if they don't know how to negotiate them, or if it's pricing, or what it is. It's just like, guys!
Netflix is probably in the squeeze because they only collect so much revenue.
I mean, look at it this
way. And they don't want to pay more than they can afford to show various things.
They're used to, the cable companies are used to this. Okay, I'm going to get paid this much from, say, Comcast or Dish Network to show a show, to have my channels on their show. And then I'm going to get this much money from advertising. So they're losing the advertising money, so they're probably trying to make up that with the Netflix subscriptions. But it's only so much, but it's not the same amount, so it's a different pay structure than what they have been used to over the past 40, 50 years.
However long cable's been in existence.
I think cable started in the late 70s, I think is when the first cable started.
So 40 years then?
Yeah.
So, I mean, Netflix's main problem is they're a pioneer in a system that everybody wants, but corporations don't want to lose the pay for.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, seriously, you pay $8 a month for all those TV shows on Netflix.
Yeah.
Plus another $8 for Hulu, and Hulu actually does the commercials, but not to the near extent that you see in cable.
Yeah. Yeah.
The advantage to Hulu and the reason I think people are willing to deal with the ads on it are, being able to watch stuff sooner.
But they also lost all of Disney stuff. And it's all back.
Netflix has gotten old stuff, but they're not getting new stuff.
Well, I mean, they lost the entire Disney catalog at one point.
Yeah, they did. They're getting some of it back, but it's all the old catalog stuff. It's none of the new catalog stuff.
I'm just saying, that does give us hope.
Yeah, well, they are trying. Yeah, it's that weird great, but see, the other thing is, too, is that other services are trying to get you to get to their thing. And I'm like, I don't want to sign up for 10 different things to watch stuff.
I have four, right?
I
would much rather have, you know, a limited number of subscription services I can go to stream content.
Funimation. I don't use the Amazon Prime one, actually, but I like the two-day shipping that I get for free on stuff that actually comes from Amazon. Hulu and Netflix.
Yeah, and I guess it's just they need to negotiate, and we need to have companies just say, streaming's the way of the future, get on board.
It is, actually. I do believe that.
Yeah, either that or a la carte cable. You know, yeah. Just say, I want this channel.
You want these channels? That's it. How much is that going to cost me?
Yeah.
I mean, I pay, you know, $5 a month or so for a cable channel, maybe.
Yeah, I mean, I would be willing to do that for things that I actually want to watch. Yeah, and I don't want my cable to be subsidized by... A lot of cable pricing is subsidized by, like, NFL and stuff. Like, you pay extra because of all the sports packaging and such.
I could care less about all that.
Yeah,
ESPN.
And I mean, like, I don't care. I do not care about this stuff. Give me what I want.
It's the basic cable channels are subsidizing the sports channels.
Yeah.
Anyway. You want to go ahead and move on, though?
Yes.
Venture Brothers Season 5, Episode 1, YouTube. Apparently, I'm supposed to watch this.
Well, you gotta watch the other
seasons. You gotta watch all the three seasons that you haven't seen yet.
So I need to watch, I've seen season one, so I need to watch seasons 2, 3, 4, and then watch episode 1 of season 5.
Yeah.
Yeah. If it's still on YouTube. I was really surprised that they had the whole thing on YouTube, quite honestly.
Yeah.
Afterwards, because we tried to watch Adventure Time through Cartoon Network, and unless you are a cable subscriber, you can't watch anything, so.
But being on YouTube, in like the Adult Swim sort of section of Cartoon Network, it's in a bit of a different case, because Adventure Time is produced by Cartoon Network,
yeah.
Whereas Venture Time is just shown on Cartoon Network.
So they must, you know, have different licensing and publishing and all that must be different. You know, it's one of those things we don't know exactly how everything works.
Yeah, I would assume that in the case of Venture Brothers, that Doc Hammer and Jackson Publick have enough clout to kind of keep most of the rights to themselves at this point.
Yeah, but it was a great season opener. Like, it just, you know, it hit one out of the park. It was just everything, like all the characters were in the right place. Everything was going at the right pace. Everything about it was just good.
I think the only thing I missed is that there was none of the triad, really, basically.
Yeah, but
there was no kind of place for it in the story that was being told. It was just kind of... Dean, I'd like to go talk to your father. I thought I told you to go bleep yourself.
No. So, and for those of you that want a quick link to that, it was put on the Facebook page just the other day?
Yes.
Yes, yesterday. Yes.
Yeah, and on our main webpage as well.
And on the main webpage. It was on the main webpage?
Yeah. It got, like, sandwiched in between a couple of your posts.
Okay, sorry. I have a habit of posting a lot really fast some days. And then I also want to welcome on a new member of the Game Slave. It was actually somebody that we had met while at Denver Comic Con. Welcome, Captain Ems. I think that's how it's pronounced. E-M-S.
Ems.
Captain Ems, welcome to the Game Slave. We look forward to your writing.
Yay. More stuff. I've noticed that we seem to have an uptick in people viewing stuff. Everyone's like, I'm in this picture, and that's me in this picture. Oh, look, there's me in this picture.
Cosplayers like to see themselves online.
I'm just glad that you can actually see stuff now. Should we go through, I don't even know if we should go through and label, like, all the costumes that were there.
It's
let people
my
do that.
Long-term plan, because I can, everybody can't edit the very top part about this picture, but as admins of the GameSlave page, we can. So they can all put their comments in, but we can actually put the top caption about the picture like I did with the Klingon tattoo from King Lear. And I think we're going to go ahead and call it there because I am running out of battery and recording space.
Yeah, I was going to say, we got a long one, but we're going to be gone for a couple of weeks here,
Next week we're probably not going to have an actual recording because I'm flying to LA for E3.
And it's the first day when we would normally, record, so there's nothing to talk about.
So hopefully I'll be able to get together on the Sunday after I get back and we can do a recording then. If not, I'll probably do a solo one where I talk about my thoughts on it, and then we'll get together the following week for an actual recording. But we'll kind of see how that goes. In the meantime, you can find us on Facebook or Twitter or Google+. It's all The Game Slave. Or you can send us mail@thegameslave.com. I do take comments, questions, rants. And yeah, I'll take just about anything. Although if you sound incoherent and you're just babbling like we do, I might mock you even though it's the same thing. Come on, we babbled a little this one.
Yeah.
We wandered.
Anywho, you all have a great time and game on.
Game on.
Game on.